Yes, and then they had their, they did the red carpet shot, you know, the thing where they were taking photos of him strutting down the red carpet. I haven't seen that for quite a while. That was good to see, though, right?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the red carpet celebration, but I know a lot of people are. It was not, you know, Higgins had been inactive two straight games, coach's decision. So for him to get the chance and take advantage of it was important. And I was just giving you guys a hard time. But after the kickoff, you thought, oh, my gosh, because they'd just gone up by 17. And it felt like, okay, the game is there for the Browns to take. And then instantly they give up that huge kickoff return. And you know that it's going to be a game until the end, right? Nothing's ever easy. But the Browns were able to make enough plays, especially defensively, in that second half. The offense was non-existent until that final drive, but the defense scored 9 points, and that wound up being the difference.
You have the resilient. They put that in the headline for your article in the Chronicle. So resilient, I mean, that seems to be a great characteristic of this team.
There's no doubt about it. And you see it within each game. You know, there'll be stumbles, there'll be issues that pop up, and the Browns have been able to overcome them the last 4 weeks. You know, we talked about that win over Dallas a week ago when Dallas went on that huge run in the fourth quarter, and the Browns were able to steady the ship enough to score late and, you know, put away that final win or that win. And you saw it overall after the opener. I mean, they lost 38-6 to the Ravens, and we all know the Ravens are a good team, but you know, that was kind of a disheartening start for this team and for Coach Kevin Stefanski in his first game ever as a head coach. And it didn't seem to faze the Browns. And it certainly didn't faze Stefanski. And they came back, and now they're on, you know, the first four-game winning streak for the organization since the end of 2009. And if you guys remember, those games didn't really matter because, like, the Browns had been 1-11, and then they win the final four under Eric Mangini to kind of give everybody some false hope. You know, these wins come at a time when it does matter, when it puts the Browns in playoff contention. It sets up a huge showdown next week against Pittsburgh. So I think it's definitely fair to say that this club has shown resiliency.
The Colts have a very good defense, very solid, very strong up front. The Browns, though, move the ball pretty well in the first half, not so much in the second. Should we be concerned at all?
You know what? I'm going to say a little bit, but to me, it was a different and unusual way for how the game played out. You're right. The Colts have a legitimate defense, so I expected some struggles offensively, and we saw that. The Colts did a good job against the Browns' run game, which obviously had been the Browns' strength through four games. You know, they ran for 307 a week ago against Dallas. And they just couldn't get anything going. Now, part of that is that Nick Chubb is out, right? Their best running back is on IR. But a big chunk of that was the Colts' defense. And you're right, in the first half, you saw Baker Mayfield be able to take advantage of the Colts trying to take away the run game. He threw for, I think it was 228 yards in the first half, and he got a bunch of help. Austin Hooper, the tight end, Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, they all made these contested catches that allowed the Browns to move the ball and put up some points. And then in the second half, that changed. Baker was more inaccurate in the second half. I used 2 for 9 with 2 interceptions. The run game still didn't get going, and that's why the Colts were able to close the gap, why the Browns didn't score points. But then I think it is important that when it came down to the end and the Browns were clinging to a 6-point lead, they were able to run the ball for 2 first downs when everyone knew they were going to try to run the ball. Kareem Hunt gets 10 yards on first down, and then right before the 2-minute warning on 3rd and 9, they run it. And they run it with Rashard Higgins pulling, the receiver you mentioned. He gets a block. Dearness Johnson goes for 28 yards, and they're able to run, you know, all but the last 21 seconds off the clock when they kicked that field goal to give them the 9-point margin. So they were able to do just enough. What I would be worried about is Baker Mayfield called it his worst game of the year, and I think he's right, and the interceptions came back. Baker threw 2. He could have thrown a 3rd that was dropped. So they need to figure out that passing game. It needs to be much more consistent for this offense to be as good as it possibly can be.
What about his status? I know he got hurt, or was it a wrist or rib? What was the incident for Baker?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. There were back-to-back plays. One was, you know, the Colts jumped offside, and you could see that. And sometimes the officials blow the play dead if they think the quarterback's in danger. But sometimes they let it go, and they let the offense have a free play. So they let this one go. There was pressure. Baker should have gotten rid of the ball sooner. Instead, he hung on to it, takes a sack, and kind of falls on the wrist. And it was his right wrist, which is obviously the strong hand. And you could tell he just wasn't comfortable. Then the next play, the end, Justin Houston comes clean and really plants Baker and kind of hits him as he throws, forces a second interception, and lands hard on Baker. And they checked out his ribs. They x-rayed him. The x-rays are negative. He said he's going to play in Pittsburgh, but I think it's something to watch to see, you know, if the wrist, arm, ribs are going to linger and have any kind of impact next week in Pittsburgh.
We had injury at the offensive line. How is that going to impact us? Because that seems to be a strength right now.
You're exactly right. It sure is. Wyatt Keller left with a calf strain in the first quarter, and then throughout the game, the Browns said he's probable to return. Then it was questionable. Then they ruled him out. So I don't know if it just tightened up on him or it felt worse and worse as the game went along. He's played at extremely high level in those first four games. He was Pro Football Focus, the analytics site, graded him number one among all NFL guards. So it would be a loss, but the Browns brought back Chris Hubbard, who started a bunch of games at right tackle the last 2 years, to be that sixth lineman. He already filled in for Jack Conklin once at right tackle and had a good game. He played the last three-plus quarters for Teller yesterday, right guard. So it would be a drop-off if Teller misses time. He's going to have an MRI today. But at least they have an established veteran who can come in, and I don't think it would be the end of the world if Teller's not in there. But when you lose a guy, if you lost a guy, we don't know if he'll be out. If you lost a guy of that caliber for any extended period, it would be a drop-off because he was playing at a really, really high level.
Scott, Myles Garrett created some mayhem yesterday. Will we see a story this week about Myles Garrett in Pittsburgh?
Hold on. I'll take care of that.
Rips the helmet off Rudolph's head and then eventually swings it and hits him in the head. And then Ogunjobi comes up and hits Rudolph from behind.
All right. When do they bring the folding chairs out in that particular thing? Answer that question. What do you think? How's that going to play out?
I think if you have your eyes open this week, you're going to see something about Myles Garrett playing Pittsburgh for the first time since that melee. It'll be a storyline this week. We usually talk to Myles on Friday, so I'll probably wait until Friday to write about it. Although I guess I have to pay attention to see what the Steelers are saying about it too. Myles is off to an incredible start. You know, he had the strip sacks in three straight games, and that ended yesterday, but he still made one of the biggest plays of the game when he forced Phillip Rivers into that intentional grounding in the end zone. It results in a safety. Those 2 points were huge and turned it into a two-score game. He also had a sack early. He forced Rivers to step up on Sheldrick Redwine's interception in the fourth quarter. So Garrett's off to an unbelievable year. He's certainly a Defensive Player of the Year candidate for the NFL, and plenty of eyes will be on him against Pittsburgh because you would assume that they would try to get under his skin. Myles has tried to put all that behind him, but this will certainly be a huge test to see whether or not he can kind of rise above everything and not do something stupid.
We've been scoring over 30 points. We've had points off of turnovers, kind of a streak that we're running. Do you think that'll continue next week as well?
Well, you know, my initial reaction is no, because the Steelers have a legitimate defense. They have playmakers, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick at safety and T.J. Watt bringing pressure off the edge and Bud Dupree bringing pressure off the edge on the other side. And I could go down the line. They have a lot of big-time players on defense. But the only reason I pause is I think the Eagles put up 29 points against them yesterday. The Eagles have been struggling offensively. The quarterback had been struggling. All the receivers are hurt. So I need to go back and watch that game. I didn't get out of the press box till after 11 last night, so I haven't gotten a chance to watch that Steelers game. but I think there would be hope there that they're at least somewhat vulnerable. I'm seeing what the Eagles did to them yesterday.
All right, can you get me up to speed? They have four games. We played five. Is they have one missed because of COVID? Do they have a bye? When is that other game going to be made up? What do we know about it? Anything?
Yeah, it was a COVID postponement. The Tennessee Titans, you know, have a huge outbreak, and they're still dealing with it. The Titans are trying to play their fourth game on Tuesday against Buffalo, and it remains dependent on if negative tests keep coming back, because it feels like every other day they get a new positive test. So the Steelers and Titans did not play a week ago, and that cost Steelers what would have been their fifth game. They had to use that instead as their bye week earlier than they want to, and then that Titans game got rescheduled for week seven, I believe. So the schedule's been jumbled across the league. The Browns have been lucky so far that they haven't fallen victim to that. But, you know, the NFL put out an adjustment of the schedule yesterday, and there were like 15 games. It felt like that had to be moved just because of these few teams that have had the positive COVID tests.
Wow. So just you got it week by week, is what we, you know, and luckily ours has been sort of following on a regular, as has been the schedule. But again, the Steelers are next up for the Browns. Scott, we'll follow you all week long, and we'll talk with you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Scott Petrick of the Chronicle-Telegram. You can find him at brownzone.com, also at Scott Petrick. And keeping you updated what's happening with our Cleveland Browns, or your Cleveland Browns, or the Cleveland Browns.